Since iTunes only keeps the last 100 episodes of any show, some of our show topics that seem to help the most people are no longer available when people search on iTunes. So, in an effort to make that information available to more people, from time to time we're going to re-air some of our most popular show topics. You can also go to kickitnaturally.com and search for any topic in our search box. For now, enjoy this show that originally aired in 2014.
T.C. Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hill, author, natural health expert, producer, blah, 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 blah.
Well, that was a lot of blahs.
That's a lot of blahs.
Blah today.
You got more blogs.
To me. You really meant those.
Oh, shit. I did.
Gung-ho about that.
I'm gung-ho today. He does a lot of things, if you can't tell. He wears a lot of different hats. He's wearing a...
I need a new hat.
Hat right now.
Christmas.
Christmas is coming. Maybe I'll ask for a hat.
Yeah.
I've never had a top hat.
That would be good.
I thought it might make me taller, but I don't know.
You could put a rabbit underneath it, freak people out, uh-huh. Take it off, it's do some plan. Magic. Okay, and to my left there is Hottie Patati Will Schmidt.
Hi.
Hello,
what's
Will Schmidt.
How's it going?
Anybody exciting that you're training lately that you want to, like, tell us some confidential information about?
That's confidential.
Yeah, it's just between us.
Yeah, right.
Just between us and our 5 11. Million listeners.
Yeah.
Okay, so today is another Ask Tony.
She did it. Nailed it.
Episode.
Said that without
I did
any
it.
Profanity.
Okay. I did it. Ask Tony any kind of question you want, and we'll try to answer it.
We've been getting some really good ones. Today we have another one from Rick, the captain of questions from our
Mr.
support
question.
Group. He's had some great questions lately. So I'm like, yeah, that's kind of fun. Let's talk
he
about that.
He could be like a superhero with like a question mark on him, and he just comes in and just starts pounding
question
away
man.
With questions.
Right.
Yeah, question
if
man.
If he keeps coming up with good questions, he might be like on the show pretty soon. He might
we'll take
just
my place.
Put him in the credits.
Yeah, there we go. All right, so if you haven't liked us on Facebook yet, I don't know why not.
Kenna already asked you to.
Yeah, I've asked you like 106-107 times now.
Probably
so,
something like that.
So go to Kick It in the Nuts. That's where we post all of our future show topics. That's where Rick asks all his questions about future show topics. And then we'll try to answer them for you.
Okay, well, let's get to a Rick question.
Let's get to a Rick question. Rick's from Cary, North Carolina. He's a very curious man. I've always heard that it's a good idea to walk after a meal to aid digestion. And just this weekend, I read somewhere that you shouldn't lie down after a meal because it interferes with digestion. As I have had acid reflux before, and it set in after I used to eat late at night and go to bed shortly afterwards, and had a chest cold where I would cough in my sleep, I can understand the second one. I was also told it was a bad idea to exercise too soon after I ate because of the reflux, but I've also heard that you should eat something within an hour of working out. I try to eat no less than 2 hours before working out, and sometimes it will still come up a little as I work out. Is this because I spend my day sitting in an office? But how about some science stuff here? Details and explanation. That's what I want. Does walking help digestion? Does lying down hurt digestion? How about sitting? How about exercising? Why?
That was a heap of questions there, Rick.
Wow.
Okay, so let's dig into a few things, and we'll definitely come back.
Is this science? Can I sleep?
Yeah, you can go to sleep. We'll mess with some science. But maybe we'll do some show tunes in the middle of it. There's no telling. Stick around just in case we jump into some cats or something like that. I don't know any of those. I think Will knows some show tunes.
I haven't done them in months.
Okay. They'll work out well.
They might be a little rusty.
So, you know, you do hear this a lot that you should walk after a meal to aid digestion. You do hear things like don't lie down and... we're going to get into some of the specifics of why people say this, but what we see is that a lot of those things that they're telling you are kind of splitting hairs, and they're kind of, they might aid a person if the person's digestion is poor and they need every little ounce of help they could get to do anything to improve it. But you look at, there's actually quite a few studies about the walking after eating to aid digestion. But when you look at what they say, you're like, oh, maybe that didn't aid anything at all. Because they talk about that if you just take a 15-minute walk after you eat, that the food will move through your stomach faster. And then they also say also it will help keep blood sugar lower. So when you look at those two things, that doesn't necessarily mean that anybody digested anything better. We see a lot of cases where the food is leaving the stomach quickly, and then it comes shooting out the back door in the form of diarrhea, and the person didn't really assimilate anything. So that's not really the goal as far as we view digestion. We view digestion like we want to get something out of it. What do we want to get out of it, Will?
Faster's not necessarily better.
Right.
Right? Especially if you've got burning diarrhea.
Right.
So, I mean, there's a lot of different nuances, probably because he asked 30 questions in one question.
Right.
But when you look at, I think we want to look at, like, the stages of digestion and talk about what does it mean for digestion to happen well in these different stages, and that can help kind of like clear up these answers and why they make sense. So
cool. Yeah, so we know the first stage is the stomach acid that you know, that helps really break down especially proteins and helps to start that breakdown process. So let's say that someone did not have enough stomach acid, they didn't have the ability to produce enough stomach acid. This is where I view, well, walking could literally, you know, it's motion, and it's going to create motion of whatever's in your stomach too. And maybe that helps that HCl saturate a little bit better if you have a very, if your body doesn't have the ability to make a lot. So if you're going to split hairs like that, yeah, then maybe just getting some juices going through movement could help improve that process a little bit better. But what we see is if you just help your body make enough stomach acid, then all of a sudden you don't need to do jumping jacks or anything like that just to get your food to digest properly.
Yeah, I think another piece of it, when we look at like people that eat a big meal right before they go to bed and they have acid reflux problems, positionally walking can be helpful of the fact that you're vertical.
Right.
And with the stomach, the way that the valve, it's called the less or the lower esophageal sphincter, is usually positioned at the top of the stomach. So when you're walking, that's at the top there, and that valve is less likely to let stuff spill through it just because of gravity. And if you lay down horizontally, it's more likely to have like the pressure of the contents of the stomach push against it. And if the chemistry of your stomach is compromised, then there'll be less of a chemical trigger to seal that valve shut. So ideally, if we had enough stomach acid, it would chemically cue the less or the lower esophageal sphincter to contract and restrict gastric juice from flowing upward.
Right, and you were calling it the less. It was throwing me off. Like it had a name like Stan or something. I would say L-E-S. And so and that's why they tell people that have reflux issues to prop the head of their bed up so that they're not lying flat. They're kind of lying a little bit of a diagonal, and it actually can improve reflux issues a little bit. Not a lot, but for some people, it can help just
a little
bit. But
then, like, some people with circulation issues, that would suck.
Because all the blood's going
to
their
feet.
Well,
yeah.
You're not sitting straight up like a vampire or anything.
You're in a coffin.
You could be in a hammock.
Yeah, so, and that's not something that we ever recommend anybody do with reflux, but I know that it can be beneficial, and especially if a person has a hiatal hernia. And that's something that comes into play here. This is when maybe staying vertical, like Will was saying, is more beneficial, is if you have a hiatal hernia that's restricting the ability of your LES to close properly, then maybe walking a little bit to stay vertical so that there's less of an opportunity for that acid to come back up could be beneficial. But we'd rather see someone fix the reflux issue. And if you fix the reflux issue, then you won't need to do the walking after the meal to keep reflux from happening. Same with the working out, you know, after a meal. They say not to eat before a workout to avoid reflux, because when you work out, you're doing some haphazard craziness if your workout is of any use. So if you're bending over, that's going to give more opportunity for reflux. But if you can improve the stomach acid level enough to trigger the LES to close properly, then there's less of a chance of having any type of reflux issue. So do you want to maybe talk a little bit about how we have people improve that issue to raise the HCl?
I do. we have several podcast episodes already completely on acid reflux that you might want to go back to and listen to if that's a big issue for you. You can just type in at kickitnaturally.com, right? You can just type in reflux, and you'll see every episode that we've mentioned that in the title. So that is a good resource. But the way we normally help people fix it is if they have a hiatal hernia, there's a couple massage techniques that I've had success with clients. Like, they've learned them from chiropractors or online. If you YouTube a video of hiatal hernia massage, and you'll one of the good ones will usually come right up to the top of the list, has a lot of views. But it's an actual manual technique where you push down in sort of this like directive way on your stomach to actually move the anatomy around a little bit. And I've worked with other chiropractors that had other techniques where they had them like lay over a counter in a way, and it really worked and fixed their reflux issues. So that was one thing mechanically dealing with a hiatal hernia. But then chemically, a lot of the times, there's different things that can cause you to not make enough stomach acid. So correcting the issue is requires you to correct those specific things to you. Like, you could have it because you have just weak digestion in the, and you haven't, you've had low blood pressure for a long time, and you haven't had enough chloride to make sufficient hydrochloric acid for a long time. So if you're like dieting for trying to get skinny to be an actress or something like that, that might have diminished your mineral reserves, and now you don't make enough stomach acid. Or you might have like an underactive thyroid could also cause you to not make enough of the gastric juices. So there's more.
You could have bacterial infections that are restricting the ability to make stomach acid, or neutralizing it with their alkaline waste. There's lots of reasons.
You'd be stuck in a sympathetic nervous system activity where your body's deprioritizing digestion. There's lots of reasons why you could have that low stomach acid present, and you want to try to correct those root causes so your body starts to make more of its own. But also, you can supplement with hydrochloric acid to help your body digest that food better. And usually, if people have had low stomach acid for a while, they usually have bacteria in their stomach that is creating more problems, like alkaline exotoxins that then make a bubbly, fizzy mess. Especially when you start to like supplement with hydrochloric acid, if you have a lot of bacteria in your stomach creating all this alkaline waste, it'll create a really big, fizzy, like junior high, elementary school volcano sort of experiment in your stomach. So you'll feel way nauseous and bloated. So if that happens to you, there are tools like a product called D-limonene, or a brand name of a D-limonene product called Heartburn Free, which you can take that can help wipe out the bacteria. So then you get rid of their alkaline exotoxin, and then it makes it much, much easier to then supplement with hydrochloric acid, and then your less will start to be able to have a chance to function properly, and your reflux can disappear.
Right, and think about what all that fizzy mess is doing, is it's creating pressure in your stomach that can then cause that acid product with the combination of your food and the acid to push back up the esophagus. So wiping out that bacteria not only allows the stomach to be more acidic, but it reduces a lot of that pressure that's causing stuff to come back up in the first place. So a lot of these things that people are saying to do, the walking, the don't lie down, all of these things are situations that you can put yourself in to help yourself a little bit if things are broken. But another option is just to make things less broken. And the video that Will was talking about for people with a hiatal hernia, we actually have it in our almost free 4-week digestion course at kickitnaturally.com, as well as videos on how to do all that HCL stuff. So you guys can check that out if you need help figuring out how to do that.
If you're a health, fitness, or nutrition professional, check out our other podcast, Six Figure Health Pro. We dig into the latest marketing techniques and business growing strategies for health professionals. To learn how to take your business to the next level, search for Six Figure Health Pro on iTunes or Stitcher, or go to sixfigurehealthpro.com to learn more. Now do what you're told.
But let's look at a couple of the other things, the other questions that Rick was looking at as far as when to eat according to working out. And if someone doesn't have a lot of the resources and minerals and all those nutrients that the body needs to create enough hydrochloric acid, then working out right after a meal might not be beneficial, because all the resources that could have gone towards helping digestion now have to go towards burpees or yeah. doing whatever workout you're kind of doing. So it kind of takes away the body's gumption that it was using to help break that food down.
Yeah, you don't digest your food as well, and you also don't work out as well, because you've got all this like blood flow demand to your gut to help break down that food. And then, but your muscles also have a huge blood demand and glycogen demand when you work out. So both end up being worse off. And the amount of time that you will like work out best after eating varies. It depends.
From person to person. Yeah. I find that I do well. I really like to eat, you know, an hour or so before I work out. That's my favorite time where I seem to feel the best and have the best performance and all that. But that will vary from person to person. And, you know, if you do that or if you wait 2 hours after you eat and then your workout, you're like getting dizzy or, you know, whatever, we know that you need more resources in there. And once you take steps to lift all those minerals and everything that the body needs and you have some reserves, then issues like crashing or dizziness or bonking basically could improve. But you could also kind of adjust not only the timing of the eating, but what you're eating before the workout.
Yeah. Would you even say like some people need to work on their digestion before they start working out because maybe they don't have any resources or whatever?
I certainly say that to some people, but I never like to make that a rule because I don't want people to not work out just because until they feel like they have a poop that's worthy of posting a picture of on Facebook or something. You know, that's not what we're saying. But if you, here's a good example. You know, we've talked before about a client that I used to have that in every single workout, about 20 to 30 minutes into the workout, she would start crying, like actual tears and just weeping. And we would, you know, stop and talk like, you know, what's going on? I don't know. She would actually break down because she just didn't have enough minerals to keep herself out of that depressed, overly emotional state. You know, we talk about how a lack of resources and minerals and nutrients and all that stuff can cause depression and emotional issues to be magnified. So it was just interesting to see a visual of that every single workout. It was quite amazing. So that's an extreme case where, okay, somebody needs to fix some things before they're doing a lot of working out. So yeah, but not everybody needs to do that.
I've had clients that we saw using the urine dipstick test. It's one of the self-tests we talk about. And they had protein on their urine or in their urine, which shows like a pretty strong indication of a catabolic state. And for them, I was like, yeah, you shouldn't do intense workouts right now. I did have them do alignment stuff. So like this kind of lower intensity yoga, corrective mechanic body weight kind of stuff was okay. But I was like, you should not push yourself. And he had really low blood pressure and was like a skinny guy, right? He's like, you should build up your chemistry a little bit first before you really push it.
Yeah.
But moving, you know, like a yoga workout can also help improve digestion. So that's another thing I wanted to mention about the potential benefits of walking. Could be even helpful to other people at a later stage in digestion, like once their food reaches their intestinal tract. It's like when it's in the stomach, you get benefits of like, okay, you're not tilting over. So we've already talked about that whole reflex issue. But to help the muscles of the intestinal tract push the food through, things like yoga and squatting and twisting and turning and stretching and hiking and all that will oftentimes trigger bowel movements because it's supportive of peristalsis. So
right. Keeping everything moving through the system.
Yeah.
And when you look at what we talk about, the sympathetic state of the body, which is the fight or flight of the autonomic nervous system. And we talked about the parasympathetic state. And what do we say about the parasympathetic state? We always say that's the rest and digest state. So they're telling you that during digestion, you shouldn't rest. You should go and move around. But in nature, like when a dog eats, it goes off and takes a nap. That's the thing it does after it eats because the body likes to rest during that digestive, more parasympathetic state because it wants a lot of the resources and energy of the body to go towards that digestive purpose. The digestive purpose is what allows us to live. It's what's pulling everything out of the food that gives us the fuel that we need. So whenever we digest, a lot of the body's functions and resources goes towards that activity, a lot more than most people think. So when they say that you need to walk or something in order to make that work correctly, you have to look at what they're looking at. They're just looking at the pace of the food moving through the stomach and the ability to lower blood sugar. Whenever they talk about all the studies they did, everybody said the same two things. It was just shocking to me that that's what they were looking at and classifying as quote-unquote improving digestion. But most people don't talk about digestion like we do. We're kind of weird.
Yeah, we're really deep in the
craziness. Yeah. And so sitting, and I don't feel like any of this stuff is caused by you sitting, Rick. I think that a lot of people sit, but they don't have reflux issues. So look at the function of the body, and that is either not having enough HCL, or maybe there's a hiatal hernia that is restricting that. And one thing, you know, most people, when they jack up HCL levels, the reflux will just stop once they get to a full dose and that stomach is acidic enough to trigger that LES valve. But if you jack yours up and maybe you also took some steps to wipe out bacteria like the D-limonene stuff, and then reflux is actually still getting worse, that's when you got to start looking at, okay, do I have a hiatal hernia? Something that's keeping this from closing correctly, and maybe a chiropractor can do that. So Rick has 17 questions. I think we nailed them all.
I want to say one other thing about exercise timing. It's I used to, like, for years I was trying to figure out what the right time was for me to eat versus workout, and it eventually just became easier as my digestion overall got better and my blood sugar got more stable. So I found, like, before I was, like, always kind of constipated from eating all these, like, GNC weight gainers, and it was never a really good time to work out because my digestion just wasn't working well. But as my system got better at processing, I found it's somewhat more like you. Like, if it's a bigger meal where it's going to have more transit time, I like to have, like, an hour and a half maybe or 2 hours. Like, if it's, like, eggs and fruit and juice and milk and something. But if it's, like, a small, like, a protein shake with maybe some berries in it or coconut water and sugar, like, an hour is plenty of time.
If I'm doing a shake, I do even less time before that. Because I find that that usually doesn't last as long, and it kind of runs out and I get hungry later. So. Yeah. So, yeah, what you're eating will vary that, too. Let's go to a recorded message of Kenna talking about...
A recorded live message.
As you recorded.
As right now. If you'd like to learn
this
how to...
This is recorded.
If you'd like to learn how to become a health coach or even just dig into more advanced teachings for yourself or your family, go to healthprocourse.com to learn about Tony and Will's course for coaches. Registration for this course only opens to the public for about a week at a time, so be sure to register for the coach newsletter so you'll be notified when the next registration opens. You'll find more info at healthprocourse.com.
Yeah, or you can you can rewind this recorded message.
Yes. All right, we got another question.
Yeah,
oh,
we got
it's
time.
Another Rick question. I'm kidding. No, it's Ruth. It's Ruth. Ruth may be related to Rick, though, because they both start with R. Okay.
I think that's how they figure it out.
Uh-huh. I would love to hear more about thyroid disease and digestion problems work together. How they work together, I guess, is what she meant there. Specifically, no thyroid. I couldn't find any of your recordings that met that goal for me.
Yeah, I was excited to get to this. We've never talked about anybody that has removed their thyroid, which happens a lot. You know, we've talked about a lot of people with thyroid issues, but I don't think we've ever had a question where somebody's like, I've had my thyroid removed. What do I do now?
Yeah,
we haven't talked about that, have we?
No, I don't think so.
I think we're about to, though.
Yeah,
it's probably. Gonna,
did she
it's
say
happening.
She had her thyroid?
Specifically, no thyroid.
Specifically, no thyroid. Her name is Ruth. Kenna, this part
we
of the show
is
not...
We should do an episode on narcolepsy. Yeah. I think Kenna...
Yeah. Kenna, this part of the show is not recorded. This is the live part. So
oh,
we're going...
Okay.
Okay, so, you know, first of all, let's talk about why someone might have no thyroid. Because... there's actually cases where somebody can be born without that gland or it's malfunctioned. Yeah, they call it congenital. It's interesting that they call it congenital hypothyroidism. Like even though you have no thyroid, they still call
it. Is that what they call it?
Hypothyroidism.
They don't call it sans thyroidism.
Yeah, you think they would have had a name that was more appropriate.
Absentee thyroidism.
But there's also a lot of cases where a doctor will remove the thyroid of like cancer issues and even other issues. And it kind of seems like it's becoming more popular now to just yank it out. And I don't know if they're kind of leaning towards being gallbladder surgery. Like, oh, well, there's a little something wrong. Why don't we just yank it out? I don't Do you hear about that much?
Yeah, I mean, my least favorite one is when someone has a hyperactive thyroid and then they use radiation to destroy it. I've had several clients with that. I'm like, man, you were born with like this rocket engine. I mean, it was hard for them. Like, they were always underweight and always like anxious and
sad stuff. For them.
Right. Like, they would just eat and eat and eat.
Oh,
and
shut up.
I swear to God. He was a guy, so he didn't like being that underweight, but he had radiation therapy and it destroyed like 70% of his thyroid.
And now he's probably fat. And,
but no, it was still pretty fast. Like his metabolism.
I mean, couldn't he bottle some of that crap and give it to us?
I mean, people with lower thyroids? Some people pay for growth hormone. Yeah. Like Tony Robbins had like this tumor in his brain that made him like, it made his like pituitary gland secrete like 20 times.
So he kept
times.
It.
Yeah,
I'll keep the tumor.
Yeah, like it's a really interesting story. Like the doctor was like, "Oh, should we remove it?" And he's like, "Don't people, because it's like you're making like 800 times the amount of growth hormone that a normal person would." And he's like, "Don't people pay for that stuff?" like, yeah, actually, it's really expensive. So he's like, "I'm gonna keep it."
Yeah,
that's why he's so giant.
Oh, yeah, wow. He's a large guy.
But anyway, the hyperthyroid people sometimes have radiation to destroy their thyroid. We have had episodes on thyroid issues before, like when we had the fabulous Benedict Lerkech.
But let's talk. Let's get into something that'll be interesting because we always mention it all the time, but how specifically can digestion relate to thyroid function? And we certainly got to look at protein.
Sure. And
I don't know why, but so many times on the show I say it protein. I always say protein in my life.
Like a shampoo.
But for some reason, when I'm on the show, I always say protein like I'm French or something.
Yeah, it's a
problem.
What do you
problem.
Use for your hair? Protein.
Protein.
I don't know, but I do know that like for your body to be in like the regular sort of rest and digest mode, where digestion is like functioning normally as a priority when you eat stuff, you need to not be in the fight or flight state.
Yeah.
Right? So when your cells are making energy in like the regular healthy way, which we refer to as cellular respiration, they are doing that via the stimulus of thyroid hormone. It's stimulating the cells to make energy in that regular way. And when they don't have thyroid hormone to do that, they have to make energy in a different way. And
the dirty way.
Or dirtier way that creates more lactic acid, ethanol, alcohol, ammonia. And it also usually activates the sympathetic hormones of like cortisol and adrenaline are part of that process of when the cells are freaking out. That's why a lot of times we'll see diabetics with very high cortisol levels. Like their thyroid's underactive, there's stuff getting in the way of their endocrine system functioning right, and so their fight or flight system kind of takes over, and you've got the stress hormone profile. So along with the stress hormone profile, you have a diminished priority of digestion and an increased priority of running from tigers.
Right, even though there might not actually be a tiger.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about that is a lot of people will get stuck in that situation because in order to improve that, in order to reduce a lot of those stress hormones in a lot of cases, the body needs to be able to get the nutrition out of the food that you're eating so that it's not in this stressed out state. But people kind of get stuck in that circular of horror, really. But if we teach people to use the supplements to boost digestion, now they can kind of synthesize digestion, pull the nutrients out of the food that the body really needs, and all of a sudden it can kind of help the body kind of kickstart back into the right path. Now, that's not always enough to get everything working correctly, but it can be a way out of that cycle.
And if you're stuck like in fight or flight or whatever, this might actually be good because I started doing it. You all know who Bob Ross is?
That yeah, used the to painter. Paint.
I've been watching his YouTube videos at night before I go to bed, and they're so relaxing.
That's amazing.
Great show. So, I mean, instead of watching horror flicks, which I was doing, and all those murder shows and having nightmares every night, I was like, I'm going to start watching Bob Ross.
Yeah.
And now I can paint better and I'm calmer at night.
Happy trees.
Yeah.
Now, are those new videos? Like he's
no, they're
still
old. School. I mean, he passed away.
I didn't think he's been around anymore. Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
New meditation techniques
from
Kenna
McEnroe.
If I did have no thyroid, Ruth, I would definitely be working with an endocrinologist. I'm pretty sure you probably are on a thyroid medication. You can also check out the resources. There's three resources that I'd recommend. Check out StopTheThyroidMadness.com. It's a great book and great community there. People that are all working with their doctors to get really good health care for themselves in their special endocrine system circumstances. And then I'd also recommend checking out Dr. Michael Ruscio's support, where he can help you get medication.
He does a lot of thyroid stuff. He's a good friend of ours on the show. We like him.
Yeah, he's an MD.
He's cute, too.
Yeah, he's a good-looking dude. He has the right to, or has the legality and capacity to prescribe medications as an MD, so if that might be something that you need without a thyroid. And then you can also check out Benedict Lerica's site, biochemnordic.com, and she also does Skype, sort of.
We only have hot people on the show.
Yeah, it's biased.
But I'm on the show, too.
Oh, yeah. That gets rid of that theory.
Like a six-pack and stuff. It's cool. So those
you're
are all
good. You're kind of cute if you don't talk.
Uh-huh.
I'm kidding.
You're kind of cute if I'm not looking at you.
The darker.
If you're asleep and I'm standing over you with a pillow about to put it over your face, you're adorable.
So, but look at, like, if somebody loses their gallbladder, there's steps that they need to take in order to improve digestion, have things function correctly, and they need to do that forever. Like, there's not a way to really fix the issue. And with a thyroid being gone, it's not going to grow back or anything. These are things that are steps that a person will need to take indefinitely. So are there any things that a person could do to maybe replace some of that? Are there, you know, we talk sometimes about maybe caffeine acting similar to thyroid hormone. Would that be beneficial to someone, or are there other things that might be helpful? I don't think we've ever talked about this.
Well, speed.
I think you definitely need to be supplementing with like a thyroid hormone, like a medication, or at least a glandular, but the medication ones are more standardized. But then you would also still want to do everything that we talk about in supporting regular cellular energy production. We got deep into that on our episode on
hypothyroidism. So you want to look at your breath rate, see where that is, make sure it's in a range, and that there's enough CO2.
Is that scientific formula you like to give?
No. Oh. Well, that's no. That's different. We're not going to go into banjo time with Will.
Pull out calculators, everybody.
But all the things that we talk about that can inhibit regular cellular energy production, you should still avoid, so that the thyroid hormone that you're medicating with can do its job. So you would want to reduce or eliminate unsaturated fats, things that elevate estrogen, things that elevate cortisol, other things that are nitric oxide inducers like arginine and such.
Anything. You also want to keep blood sugar at an even keel where you're not getting spikes and crashes.
Yeah. So all those things we talk about in that episode with Benedict Lerke and the hypothyroid issues is still very, very relevant, because it's still your cells that need to be making energy, and they require thyroid hormone to do that. You medicate with thyroid hormone, but it's not the only piece of the puzzle. You also need the cells to have an environment where they're not inhibited from functioning right, and things like estrogen and unsaturated fats can inhibit them. And they also need to have the fuel to make energy with, so they need to have a steady supply of blood sugar.
Yeah, you know what I don't like about thyroid topics, and I like this topic because it removes that, is that there's a lot of issues that where the thyroid gets blamed, and maybe the problem is actually something else. Like if their blood pressure is 80 over 60 and they're tired, a lot of times it just gets blamed to the thyroid when their body has nothing to allow all those things to function correctly. They're not digesting protein. They don't have access to that. So there's a lot of things that I like to see people work on in order to fix a lot of things that the thyroid gets blamed for, or maybe restricting the thyroid from functioning correctly. It's not that you always need to punch the thyroid and get it to work correctly. A lot of times there's a lot of other things that need to be improved. But if somebody's thyroid is gone, then you don't have to worry about blaming the wrong person. But still, while you're doing the things that we just talked about, make sure you're looking at everything else too, because a lot of other things going wrong can cause a lot of the symptoms that people blame the thyroid for.
Wow, you got really close up in there.
So the thyroid,
poor thyroid, it can be like the redheaded stepchild sometimes.
You know some stuff about redheaded stepchild.
I do.
of the adrenals too, you know.
Yeah.
Adrenal fatigue. Everyone's always so like, popular. Oh, I need to take herbs to support my adrenals. And I'm not against herbs for adrenals at all, but I'm also more concerned with why are they fatigued in the first place? Why are they like having to overwork? And, you know, what's the deal? And it can be something as simple as like, maybe you eat a lot of polyunsaturated fats. Maybe you have for a decade. So now your tissues are all saturated with that. So they just can't use the thyroid hormone that you're supplementing with, or they can't even oxidize glucose, period.
Right. So there's a lot of things to look at, but those were great questions, guys, because we used the whole show on two questions.
Really, wow.
That was, well, Rick had 30 questions.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So.
I liked those questions, too.
And today, all of our listeners can get a free audiobook from audible.com. Just go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook for the details.
And thank you so much, everybody that's been leaving us reviews on iTunes. That really helps us a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Kenna.
We'll try to read some pretty soon. Kenna left one?
I don't know. I was just saying.
I'd say, yeah, I love that Kenna. Right. If you want to learn more about how to look at your own chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the almost free 4-week digestion course.
50 cents.
50 cents.
People, U.S. dollars.
You got 50 cents to spare. Come on. 4-week digestion course at kickitnaturally.com. Now, why did it become 50 cents again?
Because the new system that we're using, now that we have some courses that cost money on the site, so the registration form just requires a credit card field. So we're like, well, what do we do now? But 50 cents was the lowest amount of what it would allow us to take.
Oh, okay.
So anybody listening, if you're upset about spending 50 cents on the course that's going to change your whole life,
we'll send you a check for 50 cents.
If you see me out and about and I have 50 cents on me, I'll give it back to you.
Or maybe a stamp and a half.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. And also, you can go to willsmybodyofknowledge.net and you can check out his blogs, his exercise, his posture stuff. There's some pictures on there of him half naked, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I started doing too, when people sign up for that, I send them a personal email real quick and just ask them, like, how can I help? So
nice.
If you're looking for some little guidance of like a particular issue, you sign up for my little newsletter thing or mailing list, I'll check in with you and see how I can help you.
Cool. All right. Thanks, everybody. Later.